come and get it.
Who's your daddy? Who's your baby? Who's your buddy? Who's your friend? And who's the one guy that you come running to when your little life starts tumbling?
She's back. Miss Amy is back with an all-new Living Way Out Here on the Survival Circle Network. Join Amy for an uplifting hour of fun on Monday, Tuesday, Thursday, and Friday evenings at 7 p.m. Pacific, 10 p.m. Eastern, right here on Survival Circle.
From command, or from party leader Creedy, or from the High Chancellor.
Why are you doing this?
Because he was right.
About what?
That this country needs more than a building right now. Needs hope.
Those who make peaceful revolution impossible will make violent revolution inevitable. Inevitable. Inevitable.
Inevitable. People should not be afraid of their governments. Governments should be afraid of their people.
Is it common sense to allow your activist judges to ignore your history, your culture, your Declaration of Independence, and every other founding document to remove God from public life? And endowed by their creator with certain inalienable rights, their creator, not the ACLU, not the will of the atheist, or the anti-Americans that sit on the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals in San Francisco. Separation of church and state, yes. Separation of God from public life, never intended by your founding fathers. Is it common sense that the very political party who claims to be the party of the people and shouts, "We will bring change," consistently stops all common sense legislation to secure your borders, establish workplace verification, and stop taxpayer money for illegals? They call themselves progressive global thinkers. We had another word for them in 1776. We called them traitors. This happened all once before. 232 years ago, it led to revolution and thousands of dead in the streets. It will happen again unless you take back America now.
I hope we have once again reminded people that man is not free unless government is limited. There's a clear cause and effect here that is as neat and predictable as a law of physics. As government expands, liberty contracts.
From my cold, dead hands.
Only an aroused citizenry will turn this uncommon sense around. And he or she who does nothing now is helping them to destroy America. My name is Thomas Paine, and I approve of this message. I only hope to God you will too.
Colonized America, we won't stand for tyranny. Oh, he. And it's too late to apologize. It's too late. I said it's too late to apologize. It's too late.
Welcome to the Shooting Bench on Survival Circle Radio Network, keeping you informed on guns, news, politics, guns, survival, preparedness, and guns. The tyrant is holding our country hostage, and our freedom is at stake. It's time to take a stand and tell the tyrant we will not comply. Join me now in the never-ending fight against tyranny, right here on the Shooting Bench. All right, the hunter's in the room, so we can go ahead and get started now. Welcome to the Shooting Bench. It's the 22nd of January. It's a Thursday. Thursday's reserved normally for gun talk and stuff, but in our ads, I say that gun talk, militia talk is related close enough to gun talk that that's what it's going to be. Plus, we've had several requests here in the last two or three weeks to talk about militia, and we haven't done a militia show for about a year. So figure it's about time. It's a timely topic right now. So we're going to go through quite a few different things. Before we start that, let's look at the got a Counter-Strike class coming up day after tomorrow. We have a concealed weapons class coming up soon, probably the 31st of January. And then we've got a battlefield medic class coming up, which is about half, a little over half full right now. So if you're wanting to get in on that, you better get it in gear. And that's all we've got scheduled right now. Now that we've got our little classroom finished and everything, we'll probably start getting classes up on a schedule, you know, regularly scheduled classes up on the shootingbench.us. So anyway, let's we're gonna spend quite a bit of time tonight on the militia. I've got a lot of news I want to get to, so we're probably gonna go way over our hour. We'll see how fast we start losing people after that. It gets pretty late out on the East Coast here, so we'll kind of play it by ear. But I want to get some of this news done. But there's lots of questions, lots of misconceptions, a lot of just absolute horse crap about militias. So we want to try to dispel some of those myths and try to ease some people's minds into getting involved in a militia. Now, first off, let's start by saying it is what it is. It's a if you're in it for the security of the nation, to defend and support the Constitution and all that, it's a militia. I'd call it what it is. That's the problem, is people haven't got the testicular fortitude to just stand up and say, "Hey, I'm in a militia." No, I wear that. I'm gonna say I'm in a citizens watch group. You know, me and the guys have quilting bees every Saturday afternoon. Yeah, just tell them what it is, would you? It's a militia. It's like carrying openly. If more people would do it, less people would be scared of it. But when people mention the word, the government and the news media has done their job so well that when somebody says, "Oh, run! It's militia," you know what they do? They blow up buildings and just shut up. Let's just listen to the show and let's just get this all figured out like big boys and girls. Put your big boy panties on and come on over here and listen to the Shooting Bench. So, if you look at the amount of things that's going on in the country right now, there's likely to be some food shortages sometime here in the not too distant future. The severity of which we have no idea at this point, but a lot of stuff going on in the agricultural world that could be devastating. Now, the simple fact, everybody that is too full of themselves, "Well, just grow a garden. Just go out and get a garden." You know, that's all well and good for people that can, but there are several hundred million people in this country that can't. They are stuck in cities. It is impossible for everyone to move out to the country. If they did, the whole country would be one big city just about. You take all the people in Los Angeles County, or Maricopa County, or New York City, Chicago, Baltimore, Philadelphia, and all of these places, and just move them all out in the country where they've all got a half an acre or an acre of land, you're going to find things pretty crowded in some parts of the country. And plus, there's the whole issue with jobs and stuff like that. So it's just not feasible for a lot of people. Now, what they can do, a lot of people that live in the cities could actually get, they can get grow boxes and grow stuff in there on their window sills and stuff like that. So, it's not completely impossible, but it's highly difficult for a lot of people. So, anyway, that's going to be part of the problem is food. There's going to be shortages, and it's not going to be as easily solved to just tell everybody to just run out and start a militia. Fuel prices are down now, but most everybody can figure out that that's probably not going to stay that way, and it could very well create some problems that we hadn't expected. The economy, job markets, forcing people to change their lifestyles, tighten their belts up a little bit. And we've seen a lot of disasters over the last year or two. I mean, people are getting tired. They're sick and tired of being sick and tired. There's been floods and, changing weather patterns. We've seen man-made disasters of pretty monumental proportions. Laws, regulations, policies passed against the will of the people. That has happened numerous times. California, where people voted against things, and they passed it anyway. In some places, it just flat doesn't matter. The continuous invasion, the flood of people illegally coming into the country on primarily on our southern border, but that's not the only place. We've gotten to the point where nearly every country in the world despises us. And we've seen our Constitution, as I say in our little soundbite, raped and left for dead by some of the very people that have sworn to protect it. People that are now intent on exercising what I would call unrighteous dominion over the citizens of this country. And then we have the biggest of the illegal aliens there occupying our White House. We have a debt now of, what is it, over $18 trillion that's going to be passed on to our great-great-grandchildren. Guns and ammunition, both of them better now, but they have been in quite a shortage for a couple of years now, especially certain types of ammunition. Right now, a lot of it's come back. Some of it is no better off now than it was 2 years ago. There's, social and economic collapse is virtually guaranteed, and a lot of people think it's going to be this year. And I can't say that I disagree with them. So hold on a second. Add this to the fact that home invasions across the country have become as common as jaywalking. And there's getting to be more and more of them every day. Illegal immigrants, drugs, a couple of the top reasons for that. So what can we do? What can we do to protect ourselves? Okay, it's not as simple. Don't be all macho and say, just go get a gun. It's not that simple. Just having a gun in and of itself means virtually nothing. Without some training and in some cases some backup, somebody to help you a little bit, you may wind up causing yourself more problems than you want to get into. So tonight we're going to get into a little bit of education, some suggestions on the citizens awareness groups and the militia. the on citizens awareness groups, everybody out there, everybody listening, everybody period, has either curiosities, fears, concerns of some type about the militia. So we're going to talk about several different things, the legitimacy and legality of the militia. Thank you, sweetie. I bet it is. And the, It's okay. The mission, obligation to militia, the common structure, training, gear, reasons for getting involved or not. And I'll try to, if I can, I'll try to keep an eye on the chat room here and answer any questions as we go along. I don't want anybody going home with unanswered questions. So let's talk first about the... Now, first, let me go over here and check the chat room here. let me look and see what all we got going on in here. All right, anyway. There was one of the things that, I was involved in held a pretty upper level leadership position in the one New Mexico militia for a while. Totally out in the open, had nothing to hide, would not hide just because we were, just because we weren't considered politically correct or socially acceptable. We're not going to go hide. And because of that, I think that being out in the open is the only good way to do this. The people that hide their group, I think, are probably too scared to fight to start with. And as I go along through here and talk about the militia, there'll be different things. You'll hear me use terms that are both past and present tense. So before we get finished, that'll probably be apparent why I'm doing that. But the first thing people say about militias is that they're illegal, they don't want to be involved with a bunch of skinheads, racist, radicals, blah, 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 all the same old tired crap. As we'll talk about here in a little bit, the militia is far from illegal, depending on how you operate it, how you run it. But let's say the true, what I would call the legitimate constitutional militia is as legal as you can get. So there are certainly some illicit groups up there that are skinheads and racist and religious intolerance. And so I'll say that the legal constitutional militia is anything but. And I can't go as far as to say that we're not a little on the radical side, because that's how things get done. The same people that would, in the same fashion that Thomas Jefferson, George Washington, Samuel Adams, where they were considered radicals of their time, all they wanted to do was create and save their country and create the Constitution and all that. They were a little radical getting it done. You're going to have to be. War is a radical thing. In our particular group, rules and regulations expressly forbid anyone from being racist or religious intolerant. We just won't stand for it. The White Mountain Militia was founded partly under the provisions of the Second Amendment. Everybody knows what the Second Amendment says, the well-regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state, the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. Pretty simple language. It's pretty cut and dried. Not too hard to figure out. So if you'll look at, open up your, I'll wait for you to grab it because I know you got a set of them there on your shelf there somewhere. Open up United States Code, Title 10, Chapter 13, Section 311. Memorize that section and chapter there so that when you're talking to people, you can say, look, go check it out yourself. Go to United States Code, Title 10, Chapter 13, Section 311, says that all of us, Now, here's what it says exactly. Some people say, well, if you're a citizen and so on, you're in the militia. That is not true. You can be if you want to be. But you are if you are an able-bodied male at least 17 years old and less than 45 years old, or up to 45 years old. And you have made a declaration of intention to become or are a citizen of the United States. Also, female citizens of the United States who are members of the National Guard. Now, that changes a little bit if you were prior service. If you look at Title 10, Section 313 of Title... No, I'm sorry, Title 32, Section 313. Then that means that you're in the militia until you are 63 years old, I believe, 63 or 64. That is if you are prior service. Now, this doesn't mean that you cannot be in the militia at the age of 13 or at the age of 67 or 74. It just means that you are, if you are between 17 and 45 or between 17 and 63 if you're prior service. So that's the way it is. It's the way United States Code spells it out. The two classes of militia are the organized militia, which by United States Code consists of the National Guard and the Naval Militia, has nothing to do with the United States Army or Marines or none of that stuff. And the other one is the unorganized militia, which is what? Consists of members of militia who are not members of the National Guard or the Naval Militia. That means pretty much everybody. Hell, everybody between the ages of 17 and 45. Now, here in Arizona, pretty simple. Arizona, we've got pretty good militia laws here. Article 16, Section 1 of our Constitution says that the militia of the state of Arizona shall consist of all capable citizens of the state. It doesn't say males, able-bodied males. It says all capable citizens of the state between the ages of 18 and 45 years, and of those between said ages who shall have declared their intention to become citizens of the United States, residing therein subject to such exemptions as now exist or as may hereafter be created by the laws of the United States or of this state. So as it stands right now, you're part of it if you're between 18 and 45. Now it says on your the composition and designation of the organized militia. Here in Arizona, the organized militia shall be designated the National Guard of Arizona and shall consist of such organized military bodies as now exist under the laws of the territory of Arizona or as may hereafter be authorized by law. So you see, the militia is basically, for all practical purposes, nothing more than an armed citizen, without which the federal government would know no boundaries. They're pushing it to the limit right now, but the only thing that keeps it even remotely in check is the fact that there are well over 100 million gun owners out there. So believe what you want, but the 100 million or so armed citizens of this country, the militia, has played a pretty significant role in keeping the government in check up to this point. That's subject to change here before long, I'm afraid. So we certainly pose no threat to them, but our, just by the fact that we're here at all, our existence has had some effect on how they do things. Whether or not that will continue, yet to be seen. Just because the militia is technically legal doesn't mean that there's not challenges sometimes. The government and the news media, again, has made that the mere mention of the word militia is enough to make most people, you know, go hide under the bed. In 1999, I was called a super patriot by a guy who claimed to be a patriot down... Hang on a minute. Down in southern New Mexico. I wrote him back and said that I was not. I said there are two types of patriots. the kind that flies the flag, sings the national anthem, puts his hand over his heart when the flag goes by in a parade, and hopes that it doesn't offend anybody when he does it. And that's too bad, because there's lots of those. The other type is the individual that's willing to sacrifice anything, up to and including his life, to protect his way of life and the Constitution. I love this quote by Mark Twain, and I use it very often in lots of my speeches and presentations and stuff. I use this quote. It could not have been said any better. He said, "In the beginning of a change, the patriot is a scarce and brave man, hated and scorned. When his cause succeeds, however, the timid join him, for then it costs nothing to be a patriot." Boy, we've seen a lot of that. We saw it in Washington. We've seen it in New Mexico. We've seen it in Arizona. It's everywhere we go, we see that, where you have people that are extremely reluctant to get involved until enough other people get out there and start doing something. Then they got somebody to follow, somebody else to take the blame, and then they'll jump out there. Hunter, maybe you didn't hear me when I said this. The 45 is not a max age. Guys, listen to me. Pay attention here. United States Code says that you are in the militia from 17 to 45 years of age, 63 years of age if you are prior service, and it does not say that you cannot be any earlier or later. It simply means that you are, period, if you're between those ages. All right? Now, you guys, I've got a lot to cover tonight, so you need to pay attention. Write it down if you need to. But I'll try to check the chat room as much as I can so that I can answer any questions or give you any, repeat something if I need to. But let's see. Let me scroll down through here. And the X-Beast, I don't know if you got it or not. I was looking. I'm kind of late catching up with you there. But the United States Code section that you're looking for is in Title 10, Chapter 13, Section 311. That is the part of the United States Code that defines the militia. And then if you go to Section 313 of Title 32, that's where it tells you that if you're prior service, that you'll be in the militia until you're 63 years old. So hopefully that'll get you what you need there. Anyway, let me go back here and see if I can catch up one more. Oops, no, don't do that. No. I hope you didn't do that. Okay. Cancel. Wow, I almost made a big mistake. let's see here. Doc, sometimes I wonder just how organized you are. No, actually, I think you're probably pretty organized now, just by some of the things that you bring to the table when you're on the show and everything. A very disorganized person probably wouldn't have that kind of awesome information. Let's see. Checking down through here real quick in the chat room here. Okay, C7 says 100 million gun owners. What does that make the U.S. citizens? The largest standing on. Yeah, it is that. No doubt about it. Okay, Hunter, I got you. I think I'll answer most of your questions as we go along here, I hope. the mission. Now, remember also, there is no carved in stone ruling as to what we should and shouldn't say and whatever. This is the militia according to Cope. All right, with the exception of the documents out there that are standard and everything, this is my definition of the way things are done. Some people have a different mindset, but this is how we do it, and our group has been very successful for 15. Edge of the Woods was one of the me and him. Go back into New Mexico into the very beginning, and that was back in 99, I believe it was 98 or 99. So we've been doing this for quite a while. So as I said, our main objective was and is to protect our constitutions, the Constitution of the United States and the Constitution of the state that you live in. But we also have another, what I consider a very important mission, and that is, as long as our chain of command is respected and abided by and the Constitution is not violated, then we become civil servants. We are there to assist law enforcement. As I said, very important that as long as our chain of command is utilized and no orders are unconstitutional, we will help the sheriff's department with or any law enforcement agency, as long as they don't violate the Constitution, maintain their oath, then we'll help with traffic control or search and rescue or anything from filling sandbags to chasing down escaped prisoners. I don't care, they'd probably never use us for that, but nevertheless, they are wasting a good resource if they don't. But we should be able also to always be available to citizens out there that need help changing a tire, moving a refrigerator, fixing a fence, corralling a burglar at 2 o'clock in the morning, whatever the case may be. We should be able to be knowledgeable enough to offer good training in general topics to the public. General things like the Constitution, some stuff on taxes, Social Security numbers, stuff like that. We don't want to get into that kind of stuff too much unless you are damn sure of your information, because you can sure get people in trouble. But long-term food storage, first aid, disaster preparedness, all that kind of stuff, we should be able to offer classes free of charge. You can ask for donations to help ops offset any costs that you have. But you don't charge to get into these things. We should be, as we go about our daily lives. Now, this is a little tough for some of the people out there that are a little too full of themselves, think they're a little tougher than they really are. I think that for our purposes, so that we are able to be more successful in recruiting and get the respect that we should have from both law enforcement and the citizenry out there, we should be nothing short of pillars of the community. We should watch our language in public. We should watch our language on public forums on the internet. We should not dress like bums everywhere you go. And I know some of you will laugh and make fun of that. You can do what you want, but my guys are that this is the way we conduct ourselves, and that's how we get public support. Without that support, we're going to fail if we're ever called on to perform our primary mission. We do not go around advocating driving without driver's licenses or driver license plates or not paying taxes or any of that common law stuff. It's not that we don't agree with some of it. Okay, it's that we have other things to worry about. Well, that we need to direct our energies in those topics we talked about, our main mission up there. putting our energies in into this common law stuff is counterproductive to what we do. There's only so much that we can take care of and do it properly. The obligations are similar to the mission. We felt obliged to defend our country, our families, our fellow patriots, and of course our way of life, the Constitution, to the death if need be. Now that's easy to say. It's real easy to jump out there and beat your chest, say, yeah, I'll support, I don't like what you're saying, but I'll support your right to say it with my very life. No, you won't. There's damn few people out there that would actually do that. Damn few. I get the sentiment, but when it comes right down to it, when the bullets start flying, we're going to see a lot of people disappear. Bunches of them. Whether or not any of them will gather up their equipment and come back at some point later on is yet to be seen. Patriotism is not a spectator sport. Our desire and ability to perform our duties is not hinged on how much yard work we had to do that weekend or how many football games were on TV. We all the time, telling people, well, we've got a field exercise this weekend. Can you make it? Oh, I'd sure like to, but I think somebody's playing the game. I promised my wife I'd clean the garage. We haven't been to dinner in town for a long time, and my socks don't match, and I mean just all kinds of things. And no, I'm sorry, I can't make it. Hang on a minute, I just got a pressing note from my wife here. Okay. If we have been obliged to keep our gear in order, be prepared to conduct a mission at any time, in any weather, your stuff should be gathered up, put in a trunk or box or closet or something where you can just grab it and go. If you're going to be a Minuteman, you need to have all your stuff gathered up in proper uniform out of the house in, no more than a half an hour. Really, come right down to it, you should probably be able to do it in 15 minutes. Now, that is depending on whether or not you need to change clothes and don't wait until the next exercise comes up to fill all your water bladders up and everything. Do that when you get back. Have them full all the time. Any food, any batteries, any fuel, any candles, anything like that you used up last time, get them replaced as soon as you walk in the door. Not when you're called out to do another mission or another exercise. Your uniforms, your vehicles. If your vehicle is under half a tank, it's empty. Keep your vehicles ready to go always with absolutely no less than a half a tank in them. We're obliged to obey our commanders, maintain discipline and order in our units. Without discipline and teamwork, we are nothing. A well-trained and organized team is like a machine, but each component is both dependent and liable to the next, dependent on and liable to the next. If one part doesn't do the job, more stress is put on the rest of the machine, eventually forcing it to fail. We're going to play a song here real quick just so I can catch my breath and get a drink of hot chocolate here. So give me just three or four minutes here. And I'll be back with you and we'll continue on. We're going to start next with the structure of the militia. That'll go on with rank and all that kind of stuff. So give us just a minute and I'll be back. Well, let's try that again and see if we can do a little better. There we go. Welcome back to the shooting bench.
Well, I didn't get dressed up for nothing.
All right, we're back. I'm a little more refreshed now. Get me some. It's kind of.
I walked through a county courthouse square.
What are you doing?
On a park bench, an old man was sitting there. I said.
Okay, I got it. Never mind. Let me check and see if we got anything we need to catch up with. The just real quick here, X-Beast, I'm a big AK fan myself, and I've got a couple of thoughts on that. I know the AK is pretty tough to make very accurate. But aside from the fact that we certainly enjoy fine accuracy, I have to ask a lot of times for the purposes that those guns are, how critical is it? If I've got two of them. One is a Wasser 10, a Romanian, and it'll shoot two and a half inches at 100 fairly easily. If you really want accuracy in an AK, you're not going to get it in a $469 gun. If you want to get accuracy, get an Arsenal or have Jim Fuller up there in Vegas build you one, and you can get, you can scare the hell out of that one MOA accuracy with that. So those are the two places that you can. Now you can do a few things to your cheaper guns to make them shoot pretty well. But primarily is in the trigger. But like I said, my Wasser shoots 2 inches or so at 100. I can hit a man-sized target probably 90% of the time at 400 yards. Inside of 400, they're mine. They 300 and in, it's pretty much 100%. At 500 yards, mine holds about 18 inches, which is you know, it's thoracic cavity for the average guy most of the time. And the headshots are pretty much out of the question unless you just happen to luck one in there. But, you know, the AK is not designed for 500-yard shooting. With that good accuracy that you get with most of your ARs, with that sometimes comes a little bit of a sacrifice in reliability. And frankly, for myself, I would rather have the reliability than the accuracy. If I want to get out much past 300 or 400 yards, I'll go with a bolt gun. Usually at that kind of range, I will have other options that don't include trying to lob them in there with an AK or an AR either, as far as that goes. If you think about it, yes, your AR may be perfectly accurate enough to make those headshots out there at 500 yards, but you also got to remember that little 22 bullet, when it gets that far out there, it's starting to run out of poop pretty quick. It's easily defeated when you're when it's out there much over 300 or so. So now that changed a lot when they went to the heavier bullets. When they went to the faster twist and the 62, 69 grain bullets, huge difference. That really helped the little poodle shooter ARs. Made a big difference in their effectiveness. So, but anyway, let's go on with our militia stuff here. I'll try to speed it up a little bit. We got a lot of stuff to talk about tonight. It's already almost 10 and we ain't near done. So anyway, as far as the structure goes in militia for our unit, we're organized pretty similar to a military unit with a few things that really need to be changed because of our size and geographical location and mission and stuff. But for the most part, we adhered to U.S. Army TONE. We had rules and regulations that are carved in stone, still do. We found that once we got a little tougher on sticking to the rules, we had a little better retention rate of people when they felt like they really belonged to an organization that really cared and really stuck to their guns, so to speak, then it was easier to hold on to people. And I think people were inclined to join. They were looking for the discipline and commitment that it took to stay with us, and by enforcing those rules, that's what they were getting. We had written, carved in stone standards for promotion, marksmanship, physical fitness, uniforms, field gear, disciplinary actions, and we don't promote to the next level on the good old boy system. X-Beast, I saw a little post in there a while ago that said that you have a potty mouth. A lot of us do, okay? When we're looking at, I'm definitely no angel when it comes to my language, but you will never hear me in mixed company or on a public forum of some kind where I don't know who's listening, or on a radio where I don't know that there's not women and kids listening on the other side. I will not compromise my integrity or the integrity of my unit by sounding like some uneducated hillbilly out there with trashy mouth. It doesn't, if you're not articulate enough to get your point across without using that kind of language, then probably it'd be best just not to say anything. And that goes for, you know, hundreds and hundreds of guys out there. It doesn't make us any tougher. It doesn't make people look up to us by using that kind of language. And not that I'm any angel, believe me. I'm not saying that. I'm no prude here when it comes to language. But there's a place for it. And actually, I guess you get right down to it, there's really not a place for it. It's just we, you know, a lot of us do it. But there's really not a place for that kind of language. But it's certainly not in public forum, public places where, you know, you're going to get a lot more respect both from your troops and from the general public by not using that kind of language. So, but we're a volunteer organization, of course, but we are an organization. We were and we are. As William Wallace said in Braveheart, he said, "You can come and go as you please, but as long as you're here and a part of this unit, then you'll do what I say. You abide by all the rules and regulations, the decisions of your commanders, and there's strength in numbers, and tactically there is an advantage to small, discrete groups. In most cases, though, we found that this belief in leaderless resistance is nothing more than an excuse to not get involved. There is a place for leaderless resistance, but in my opinion, it's probably most effective as part of a larger effort." What little funding we got came from the paying of dues, donations from patriotic citizens and benefactors that were otherwise unable to help. They had physical challenges or jobs or that they couldn't compromise or whatever, so they could do their best to support us with a little cash to put in our funds. So, and we did some fundraising functions. We even had a fundraiser one time with the McKinley County Sheriff's Department up in between Grants and Gallup, New Mexico. But unlike a lot of other militia units across the nation, we're not just looking for warm bodies. We wanted loyal, dependable, dedicated, hardworking patriots. I'd rather have two or three of those than 30 of them that were not, that were unreliable. The ones we were looking for were someone that, not somebody to share conspiracy theories with or have a weekend of beer drinking. We didn't, those people are not welcome. That's not what we do. We became quite choosy as to who we allowed to associate with us. Like the Marine poster said, we're looking for a few good men. And, of course, we had positions for women, too. After all, we are an equal opportunity militia. But we didn't accept convicted felons. Now, that's a problem because there are people out there today, right now as we sprechen, that are convicted felons. And Kilogram, you're going to get your one and only warning right now. And you do not use that kind of language on this forum, period. I don't want to see it again or you'll be gone. See where I'm at here. We have positions for everybody. We didn't accept convicted felons, people with known alcohol and drug problems, wife beaters, less than honorably discharged veterans. We're kind of choosy about who we take. Anyone that wanted to join would fill out the required applications, including a liability waiver, a statement of non-conviction. They would produce a DD-214 if they were prior service, and there may be some other requirements depending on, you know, case-by-case basis. If one couldn't make a weekend or even a week, for that matter, without a beer or a joint, then that's not what we're looking for. That being said, don't think that because some were elderly, overweight, female, or inexperienced, that we didn't have a place for them. We needed more logistical and support personnel than we did anything else. We needed people in supply, communications, medical, mechanical, transportation, and food preparation. Our doctrine was based on the notion that even though some people will come to a few exercises and then quit, that individual did two things while they were with us. One of them, they received some decent training while they were here to help use to protect themselves and their loved ones in time of need. And they found out who and what we were and how to get a hold of us should the need ever arise for a larger effort. So not completely unlike the United States military. You know, you go in and you train, you stay 2, 3, 4 years, and you get out. Those people are still trained and they're still available. And that's kind of how we look at it with the militia. So if our, let's go into training here. There's, let me see. Yeah, Yakima Glock, thank you. Rifle Dynamics, that was who I was looking for when I said Jim Fuller a while ago. I like the heck out of Jim Fuller. He's a good guy. But, yeah, Rifle Dynamics is what you want to look for. The X-Beast, I don't know what happened to your computer there. I don't know. Sorry about that. It's, Amy just texted me here, and it is 18 degrees out there. It's not even quite 10 o'clock yet. It's going to be a chilly one tonight, I'm afraid. One of those things, I guess. It happens when you live at 7,000 feet, I guess. Okay, let's look at our training. We used to have weekly meetings, monthly FTXs, field training exercises, and where we always did some type of training. We trained in weapons, small unit tactics, land nav, first aid, communications, wilderness survival, a little bit of hand-to-hand combat, camouflage, cover and concealment, just all kinds of things. Now, some of our training also, we were serious about it. When we went to the field, we prepared to get muddy, hot, sweaty, cold, tired, frustrated, and just generally have a good time. But we also trained, like I said a while ago, on food storage, disaster preparedness, and some more domestic things that we're also going to need to know. It's not all about fighting. You know, there's other things that need to be covered. We spent a little bit of time on drill and ceremonies, military courtesy, professional bearing. We like to look professional. People, we get the respect from the citizens when we look and act professional. I cannot stress that strongly enough. It seemed imperative that we have this impressive professional image for those that would criticize us. So we did not, will not ever train to specifically fight the United States government. That's not what we train to fight, period. Ideally, if we possibly could, we want to be there to help the government, law enforcement, military, when we can, when we've got people from the outside attacking our country and our Constitution. Contrary to popular belief, have never been anti-government. We are anti-corruption in government. We didn't particularly want to change the government in any way. We just want to get it, the control of it, returned to the people. And we trained in to be effective in any mission that we might be asked to perform. But, yeah, we did train to fight. Who we trained to fight did not affect how we train. It doesn't matter. We look at different. We train in certain mountain and desert operations. We went through conventional things, guerrilla warfare efforts. And I can't stress enough that it is our sincerest hope that we could assist our country's troops or law enforcement in some manner. But we're prepared to defend our way of life against any enemy, foreign or domestic. So, now if we go back to what the laws said earlier about the militia, it doesn't say anywhere that the militia needed to have any type of rank structure or to train. It also doesn't say that you can't. The first revolution was fought and won by men that were nothing more than the militia. The organization of the United States military came much later. And I predict that the Second American Revolution will be much the same. So we've already talked about the different, different reasons people find to not join the militia and all that stuff. So we won't go into that again. But I'd say that if you're serious, if you think you're serious, you profess to be serious to your friends and all that, then get serious. Be serious about it. Hey, Castle's in there. Good to see you, buddy. It's been a while. Looks like we got a couple of newbies in there. K7JXB. Not sure I know who you are, but welcome to the shooting bench. Glad you could make it in here. I know Michael New was dishonorably discharged. That really is not relevant to what we're talking about tonight, other than the fact that he did stand up for what he believed in. And, God bless him. It was a matter of fact, I was just getting started in the militia back in back when that was going on. I was in there about 2 years, I guess, prior to Michael New's dilemma with refusing to wear the UN uniform. But Castle's probably, I don't know. I don't know if I'd say 99% of the training needs to be outside of the fight. I'd say probably, in my own opinion, probably 75-80% outside of the fight. We do, there's a lot of stuff needs to be worked on as far as weapons handling and training and marksmanship and all that kind of stuff for sure. But anyway, let me check and see. Hooligan505, I think I know who you are. I believe so. Norprey's joining. Norprey, I forgot to answer your deal on Facebook, and I'll have to tell you that I think that the decision that was made by that individual was because of his own principles and values, and I wouldn't take that away from him for nothing in the world. I support that 100%. I don't agree with it for the reasons that that he put on there, but it we're all free to make whatever decision, good or bad, that we can. All right, let's look here. Oh, okay. Looks like X Beast had to change 98.5. Okay. Looks like X Beast had to change his handle there or something. Okay. Let's. There's a couple other things I wanted to cover on there. Finding a militia unit closest to you. That can be a little tough because there's guys out there that. They claim to have their own little unit and everything. You've really got to be skeptical. You've got to hold these people's feet to the fire and make sure that you're not getting involved in something. Because I'll tell you the truth, there are some damn sure some wackos out there. That is why I insist. I'd like to be able to insist that you do the same thing. Of course, I can't, but I hope you will take my advice. And if you're going to be involved in the militia or you're going to start your own or whatever, be professional. Be respectful. Your integrity is of the utmost importance. When you lose your integrity with the people, when you sacrifice your integrity for your own ego, then you are no better than the people that we are fighting. You cannot expect your own compatriots to respect you and fight side by side with you when you sacrifice your own integrity for your ego, because you're disrespectful, you're foul-mouthed, you're dishonest. That is, as far as I'm concerned, absolutely unacceptable. So finding a unit, first thing you do is the X-Beast, you're right. We were right about that same time. Matter of fact, I was still kind of in the dark myself, Ruby Ridge and Waco there. That was probably the two things that got me to looking in the right direction. However, it still took me 2 or 3 years to get fully involved in the Patriot movement after that. But go to the internet, and whatever state you live in, just put in Alabama militia, or militias in Alabama, or Texas, or wherever it is that you're at, and see what you come up with. If you come up with some names and websites and stuff, get on there, study what they do, see what they have to say, see if there's any documents and stuff on there to study and see what they're all about. If there's not, hopefully maybe there's a phone number or website or an email address that you can go to get a hold of these people and figure out what they're about. My suggestion would be, and I hope that you'll heed it, is that the stuff that we're talking about tonight, kind of use that to gauge the type of people that you're getting involved with. Because these people can destroy you and your family life and your bank account and your job and everything else about you by just being in the wrong place at the wrong time with the wrong bunch of idiots. Make sure we're willing to sacrifice all those things as long as it's for a good cause. I am not willing to sacrifice any of those things for a moron. So if you're going to look around here a little bit, make sure that you know what you're dealing with. When we bring people on, we put them on for a 60-day probationary period. I don't care how much experience they have, where they came from, what their name is, what they do, what type of special forces they were. I don't care. They're going to be here for 60 days and make their meetings and pay their dues and get their gear and do everything. And we're going to evaluate them while they evaluate us. And at the end of 60 days, no harm, no foul. If you don't agree with what we do and who we are, you're certainly welcome to leave, shake hands, and we're glad to have met you. And all that. If we don't think that you're what we want, same thing. And you'll agree to that before we start. So, there's Castle. That's probably good advice. There's quite a few places out there. Let's see, what was the name of that? There's a constitutional list. A guy's named John something runs it. I don't care for him too much. He's been a thorn in my side for 10 years. Anyway, there's just do some searches out there. You can find them. I need to quit calling you X Beast and call you K7. How about that? We got a K7 and a C7. So, quality, absolutely. That's what I was saying a while ago. I would rather have three guys that were well trained, loyal, patriotic, knew that I had my back, rather than, 30 of them just because they're warm bodies out there. Big difference there. Let's see where we're at here. Starting your own unit. Use some of these things that we talked about. You don't have to be or have been in the military or in law enforcement or any of that kind of stuff. All you need to do is love your country unconditionally and agree with the Constitution and support it and defend it. If you want to start your own unit, what I would suggest is that you don't ever get out there and say, okay, this is my militia. I want to start. This is our militia. And once we get a few people together, we're going to hold an election and find out who the leader is going to be. when you just start a thing and decide you're going to be the general right off the bat, you could be looking at some problems on down the road. There needs to be things in your rules and regulations that allow for the removal of anybody up to and including your state commander or your company, your unit commander. There needs to be grievance procedures grievance procedures and all that. And hang on a second, I'm getting. All right, let's try that again. But we've got a pretty good set of rules and regulations made up in ours, and it's not that we have those kind of problems. Well, we have tried to anticipate everything that might happen and tried to address that in writing so that we don't have to try to deal with it and make up the rules as we go along. Yeah, Doc, that's probably good advice there to avoid the Ferguson militia. Now. Okay. When you go to start one like that, first off, you probably want to check and make sure what the laws are in your state. See if there's anything in your city or county that would be detrimental to your starting unit. Like, if there is, then that's when you're going to want to start a citizens awareness group instead of a militia. If you're subject to harsh penalties for creating a militia or being in a militia, then don't. Be in a citizens awareness group and do the same things. And just advise your members to be careful how they talk to people and how they announce, how they discuss the things that they do, and make sure that that militia word never comes up. If you're in a place where you are subject to be incarcerated, your life ruined for being a militia, then don't. Go ahead and hold on to that that citizens awareness group or whatever you want to call yourself. It doesn't matter. Let's see. All right. If you're going to start a group, look for at least five guys to start with. Try to get five people together. 6 to 10 would probably be a lot better if you possibly can. Get those people together, sit around, talk, make sure everybody's on the same sheet of music, make sure to see what everybody wants to do, make sure you kind of feel each other out and make sure that there's no underlying issues or agendas that they may have, whether it be racism, religious intolerance, vindictiveness of some kind, vengefulness against the government or anything like that. And make sure your group is squared away. Once you do that, then you're going to want to hold an election for your commanders. Once that's done, the militia is a democracy one time. That is when your initial leaders are elected. After that, it kind of becomes a benevolent dictatorship. That's about the best way to put it. And with that being said, make sure that there are provisions to remove anybody in a leadership position going through the right channels to do it, so that we don't create a regular dictatorship there. That's probably, to get started, that's the best advice I could give you right now. Look at the gear that you need. I'll tell you, getting started, if you're just newly getting involved in the militia, boys, I'm going to tell you, and girls, It is not cheap. You need to, there's certain things that for your own safety, for the safety of your unit and effectiveness in what you do, there's a lot of stuff that you need to get. And if you look, for those of you that were in the military, look at your field gear that you were issued. You've got to have at least that much, being as how we don't have the support of being able to just go back to the rear, go back to base camp somewhere and replenish all your stuff. So we got to have at least what we did in the military. So your basic gear is going to consist of something that is, you know, you're going to need a vest or, you know, the old traditional LBE, pistol belt and suspenders and stuff. Something like that in good condition, or a good tactical vest of some kind. What it is doesn't have to be, it needs to be good quality. Army surplus stuff is great. It's inexpensive, it's readily available, it's plentiful, and it works. There's nothing wrong with it. I would try to stay away from some of the more recreational stuff because it looks cool. If it's not field tested and you don't buy it because it's cheap, you don't buy it because it looks neat. You buy it because it's already been tested. There's a lot of stuff out there that is not military that's still good. A lot of stuff that law enforcement and first responders use, a lot of that stuff is good heavy-duty stuff. On your suspenders or on your vest, now remember, some of this stuff, you know, you can, it's strictly suggestions for you, okay? You want to have a little trauma kit or a field dressing pouch with field dressing in it on one side or the other, or on the outside somewhere where it's easy to get to. Should be clearly marked so that if you go down, somebody else can just look up there and say, okay, there's his field dressing. Let's get him fixed up and get him to safety here. Generally on the other side somewhere you're going to have a compass, or you should have earplugs in a little plastic carrying case of some kind. That should be included on your web gear or your uniform at all times. There's a couple of real good ones out there. One of them's Combat Arms plugs by Peltor. Excellent, excellent plug. Matter of fact, I have a pair of them in my pocket right now. I carry them with me every single day of my life. Or Sonic 2s, something like that. I try to stay away from the foam plugs unless you're around artillery or something, because they're a little bit too effective. I like to have the ones with the diaphragms in them so that I can still hear, to some degree, voices and stuff, but be protected from high impulse noise. On your belt or as an integral part of your vest, you should have at least two good sturdy magazine pouches of size to carry at least two magazines each for your rifle. Your combat load should consist of somewhere between 150 and 300 rounds, depending on how you carry it, your type of weapon that you carry and all that. But somewhere around 250 is pretty standard out there. Whether it's in stripper clips for an SKS or whatever the case may be. You should have at least one, preferably two, 3-liter hydration bladders. Now that depends on your mission, how long you're going to be gone, what kind of gear you have. Those are recommended, but a 2 1-quart canteens with covers, at the minimum, at least one of them having a cup. And you may elect to leave one with your other gear during a short operation of some kind, but you should always have at least two available. Water bladders are the bomb. I mean, that's just, they're great. I carry a water bladder and a canteen in case I come up on somebody that's hurt. Whatever, I need to leave somebody, I can always take off a canteen and leave it with them, even fill it out of my bladder, and then I can still take some of my some water with me. You want a good heavy-duty fixed-blade knife of some type, K-bar or cold steel or SOF or something like that. A lot of times you might want to put a little butt pack on or another pouch to carry a minimal amount of food and first aid supplies, socks and stuff like that for extended patrols. Or you might even carry this instead of your big pack for short patrols. You want it to be small enough so that it doesn't interfere with your full-size pack. Handgun is optional, but if it's carried, you should have a magazine pouch with at least two spare magazines. The holster for your handgun should be compatible with your military belt or your vest, however you're carrying it. And ideally, you should have a flap on it to protect your weapon from excessive dirt and loss. A lot of times they have those flaps that fasten back out of the way if you're in a place where you think you may need to access the weapon a little quicker. Those military, like the UM-82s or something like that, great holsters for the field, as long as you are carrying a rifle as your primary weapon. All your buckles and straps and stuff should be secured in some way with tape or ranger bands or something to keep the noise down. Velcro should be avoided in most cases because of the noise that it makes. It's okay for certain applications. Any of your shiny buckles and stuff, metal object, ought to be subdued with a black marker or paint of some kind or something. Your backpack that you're going to get, I still have no problem with the old original Alice packs. I think they're great packs. There's a lot of them out there now that are a whole lot better. Okay, I understand that. I'm just saying if you're really on a budget and trying hard to get outfitted, then there's not a thing wrong with getting it out. You can get an Alice pack and a frame for $50 in most places. So, okay, X-Beast, I see your post up there. I'm sorry, I haven't been looking at the chat. I will continue to call you X-Beast then. Let me see if I'm missing anything else in the chat room here. The Northwest Heavies, he's doing real well up there with his guys. I'm proud of you guys for doing what you're doing. Let's see. Hopper, I've never looked into the camo pajamas too much. I'll have to check into that. Multicam pajamas would be awesome, actually. But anyway, I'm sorry I'm pausing here. I'm trying to catch up with the chat room here a little bit. I know that you guys are joking here, you know, sweatpants and fanny pack and all this stuff. I know you're joking about that, but I'll tell you what, I can't tell you how many times that we've seen people with stupid stuff like that, totally ineffective, a complete liability to your unit. And the Yakima Glock, the drop leg holsters, the thigh holsters. Now there's a couple of types there. If you're talking about a 2-inch drop, so you can get underneath a jacket or a belt or something, that's okay. I see so many of these guys with the thigh holsters with the gun down, you know, out of their reach, actually, down low on their thigh. And they're slow, they're vulnerable, they get tangled up in brush. If you get down in a position where you have to low crawl or get down through the dirt, you're subject to Michigan. I'll tell you what, the only time that I ever lost a weapon when I was out on a training exercise, I lost a Browning High Power out of a thigh holster. That's back when I was just getting started and I was trying to be as cool as everybody else. And I found out right away quick that was kind of a stupid way to carry that. We found the gun. And I got rid of that holster that day. I do have a couple of drop holsters that go down 2 or 3 inches to get underneath other gear. I don't often use them, but they actually I have a drop device on one of my 82s, and that gets it underneath my jacket in the winter, but not way down low, just underneath the field jacket and a belt and stuff so that I can access it without having to dig through a bunch of crap. Let's see. And Doc, I don't know, you know, I think the 2-liter plastic bottles are probably fine if that's all you've got, but they slosh and they crunch. They make a lot of noise. If you need to use those for whatever reason, it'd be a hell of a lot better than not having anything. But if you can't get a regular water bladder, then get a 2-quart collapsible canteen, and regular military type collapsible, and collapse it as you drink it, and you know, push it where the water comes to the top, put the lid back on it, and you don't get any sloshing when you're marching along in the woods. There, that little bit of noise is undesirable. The sounds like the dogs are going crazy out there. I hope Amy takes care of that. Okay, your most of your gear and how you pack your gear is mostly personal preference, but you want to be sure and pack the things that you use the most and your emergency items in the easiest locations to get to, and that your extra clothes are packed in a waterproof bag, even if it's just a trash bag in the bottom of your pack. Your clothes are not don't need to be easily and quickly accessible. They can be down in the bottom. You're not going to be changing clothes unless you're in a relatively safe area where you know, you've got guards out and everything. Put your first aid stuff where you can get to it immediately. Put your personal hygiene stuff where you can get to it fairly easily. If you just have a quick short stop and you need to. You need to brush your teeth, go to the bathroom, clean yourself up just a little bit because you've been on the trail for a while. Have that stuff where it's reasonably easy to get to. Of course, your water, knife, stuff like that should be easy and quick to get to. You need to have a mess kit of some kind, depending on how long you're going to be gone. You need to have one in your gear. I carry, a lot of us do have a decent-sized trunk with all the extra stuff in it, which has got extra food, extra ammo, extra gear, our winter stuff, all of our militia stuff, all put together and kept in one place. And then you put your packs accordingly out of that box when you get out there in the field. Maybe I shouldn't say that. Your pack is packed all the time. But if you need to have any additional, you know, any changes or modifications to what you're carrying, it should all be in that box. You shouldn't have to say, oh, damn, I left that at home. I don't know what I'm going to do now. You should have all that stuff with you all the time. You should have food for at least 3 days in your pack. MREs are fine. They're fast, handy, and light, but there's other good sources as well. One of them, I keep some little deals of cracked grain I put a half a cup in a pouch with some sugar and cinnamon in it. And if I have time, I take my canteen cup and put a little water in it and, bring it to a boil real quick. And I can have a good, hot, nutritious meal in, 7 or 8 minutes there. Doesn't take too awful long. It's light. It's nutritious, easy to fix. You guys have heard me talk about survival tabs a lot of times. If you're going on a quick light deal somewhere and you don't want to carry a bunch of food, take survival tabs. They're awesome. Amazing, deals. I keep a bunch of those in there. I take some, even if I am going to take an MRE or some other type of food, I still take a few survival tabs. When it comes right down to it, if I have to abandon, pretty much everything I got, I can stick those survival tabs in my pocket and I've still got meals. Matches and waterproof container and or a lighter and or a magnesium fire starter. A large candle of some kind. I like beeswax candles. Matter of fact, the large 3-wick beeswax candles put out enough heat for me to boil my water to either purify the water or cook my grain. Or cereal, whatever you want to call it. The candles are, the beeswax candles are smoke-free. They're hotter and brighter than paraffin candles. They don't melt as quickly. They're a tough act to follow when it comes to candles. Some optional things may be some sterno or trioxane bars. Trioxane is very clean, easy to light, burns hot enough, quick enough to warm up your hands, do some minor cooking on, and no smoke and very low light signature. It's a very discreet when you burn it. Not a bad idea to have a couple of those around, even if you are going to have the candle in there. First aid supplies, you pick what you want for your first aid, but at a minimum, you should have various types of band-aids, large compress, topical ointment of some kind, hydrocortisone, super glue, tweezers, razor blade, pain relievers, maybe something like Advil or Tylenol or something, two or three suture kits, disinfectant of some kind, betadine, methylate, iodine, colloidal silver, a small roll of gauze and adhesive tape, a small plastic bottle of colloidal silver is absolutely indispensable, not only as a disinfectant and antibiotic, but also will help you to purify water in 6 minutes if you need to. You should have more extensive medical gear. Your unit needs to have bigger stuff. Your medic is going to carry more of that stuff, and you'll have more of it back in camp. Something to purify water with. Again, colloidal silver is great for that, or a water purification deal of some kind, filter, or purification tablets. Poncho. Now remember, all this is a suggestion. You can pick and choose whatever you think you need out of here. Just naming them off as reminders here. Poncho, camouflage sticks, or some type of camo compact like bow hunters use. A lightweight camo face net and gloves are very useful if you just want to put something on and then get it off and be discreet, so you don't have to worry about someone seeing the camouflage on your face and wondering what you've been up to. A little lightweight mask that bow hunters use is awesome for that. A ground cloth or a tarp of some kind, preferably camo if you can find it, OD green if you can't, brown is okay. This is more versatile than a tent. It's lighter, usually faster to put up and take down. A 5x8 is minimum. 8x10 works really well to provide a shelter with a floor big enough for you and your gear. Sleeping bag and a waterproof bag. Summer operations, you may only need a good heavy blanket of some kind. Space blanket. Space blankets are for emergencies. They are way too noisy to use under most conditions. If you're in a hostile environment, you definitely do not want to use a space blanket unless you're dying. Space blankets are also good for carrying water. They're good for signaling. They're good. You can make solar stills with them. I mean, there's just a lot of good uses for a space blanket. 50 to 100 feet of good strong twine or parachute cord, 50 feet of 3/8 or half inch nylon rope, or that what they call mule tape, the 2,500 pound mule tape, some weapons cleaning supplies, flashlight and batteries. There's looks like Castle's leaving us, if I haven't already missed him. Sorry about that. It's oh, Doc. Let's see here. Going up here real quick and checking my chat room here. Hey, Yakima Glock, I'm glad to hear that. I'm glad to hear that you're working on that spare tire and you're getting rid of some of that. It's tough to do sometimes, but we all have to work on that. All right. weapons clean. Oh, flashlight and batteries. You might include either a blue or a red lens. I say blue and or a red lens for map reading. Reason I say that is because if you have, depending on where you're at, the red lens keeps the signature down of the light a little bit, and if you're using it for an extended period of time, it helps protect your night vision. Problem is, if you're reading maps with it, all of your highways and stuff go away. Your red lines, any light brown or red lines that's on the map disappear. So you can use a blue lens to take care of that, and you can see the highways. However, if you use a blue lens, all your water disappears. Okay, for us here in Arizona, that's really not that big a deal. Most of the places in the state, there's not any water bodies really big enough that we need to be terribly concerned about. Up where Northwest Heavy is at, up in the Pacific Northwest, that could be a killer. There's lots of water, huge rivers, lakes everywhere. When the water disappears and you go take off and your time is of the essence and you happen to come up on the Columbia River, you've had a bad day. It's not going to be pretty. So I recommend having both lenses, and it just depends on where you're at and what your mission is, what you need to take care of there. Flashlights, there's hundreds of good flashlights out there now. Surefire used to be the biggest, best game in town. They're still arguably one of the best. Great lights. They're a hell of a lot more expensive than some of the rest of them. Go to, there's good tactical flashlights all over. Streamlight makes good lights. Olight makes good lights. Jetbeam makes good lights. Jetbeam makes an awesome 750 lumen light. I've got a couple of those, and boy, I mean, it turns the night into day. You can see through people with that light. Keep your batteries pretty standard. Your little lithium batteries at your Surefire lights and stuff, double A's, 9 volts, D cells if you must. Stay away from C's, stay away from triple A's. Any of those that are, harder to find and not standard in other people's gear, then, when you're out of batteries, you're just going to be out of batteries. A multi-tool like your Leatherman or Super Tool or something like that, whetstone, something to sharpen your knife with. There's a lot of little deals out there with, embedded, tungsten bars and ceramic bars in them at the proper angle, real fast, real easy to sharpen a knife quickly when you need to. You might want to throw in a couple of chemical light sticks depending on where you're going and what you're doing. An entrenching tool of some kind. Glock makes an awesome entrenching tool. It has a real good, very aggressive saw in the handle. It's very, very lightweight, very rugged little entrenching tool. The military folding entrenching tools with the D handles on them, great tool, great weapon. The collapsible military canteens, we talked about those already. These will attach to your pack in some way. They're optional. Some additional survival items. You might put in a signaling mirror, a little bit of minimal fishing gear, snare wire, cable saw. Some of that stuff, a map of the area, a protractor and a pencil is essential. Some type of optics. Redundant optics are nothing wrong with redundancy when it comes to some of this stuff. A decent set of small compact binoculars, and if you've already got a rifle scope, well, there's your redundancy right there. You might want to carry a small set of binoculars and just a small monocular that is very, very light, takes up very little room, but if something were to happen to be your binoculars, you wouldn't be left completely without. Put an extra set of BDUs in there or more, depending on where you're going and what you're doing. 2 or 3 pairs of socks, at least 1 change of underwear, towel, washcloth, personal hygiene stuff. Now remember, this isn't stuff that you're going to carry every time you go out on patrol. A lot of this stuff will be left in camp, but it's stuff that you're going to need when you get back to camp. You might pick a little bit of this stuff. Of course, you want to keep it make sure you have room for ammo and water in first aid stuff, you know, primarily when you're out. But some things to have extra. You decide how much of it you want to carry. Towel and washcloth, personal hygiene stuff, comb, razor, odor-free soap, toilet paper, toothbrush, non-fragrant toothpaste or baking soda. Baking soda is also good for insect bites, skin irritations, and as an antacid. You might also want to put a little extra ammo in besides what's on your belt as well. Now, if you're wondering, this is the sheet of stuff that we pass out. I wrote this up like 10 years ago. No, 15 years ago. And have altered it, modified it a little bit with the times as new equipment comes out. But this is what gets handed to all of our members so that they can have some kind of a guideline to get stuff. This is handed out with their copy of the rules and regulations and everything. Another thing is protective mask. There's no standard on the mask that we use. People call them gas masks. They're not gas masks. They're a protective mask. But your mask, as far as we're concerned, should accept the screw-on type NATO filters, like the Israelis, the Canadians, even the current issue U.S. The surplus Israeli mask is a great mask for the money. It's a lot easier to shoot out of than some of the other ones. And you should have at least one new unopened filter in your gear, a training filter or an adapter in a carrying case for your mask. Weapons. Well, we could spend all night on this. In the interest of being somewhat standard, not only with our unit and with a lot of others, there's three weapons out there that are the most standard as far as your what the liberals like to call assault rifles, and that is the AK, the AR, and the SKS. A fourth one would be the Ruger Mini 14. As far as light, quick handling, high capacity, fast firing weapons, those four, actually the first three, are the most popular. AK and AR being the two most popular. Also, there's M1As, M1 Grand, FNs, HKs. There's lots of different styles out there, but whatever you're going to do, not only standardize with your unit, what if your unit all of a sudden, all of your guys have said, okay, we're going to all stick with HK-91s. But you get out there amongst other people, other militia members, other picking up stuff after a firefight or something. The chances of you finding magazines and parts and stuff for HK-91s are pretty slim. You might here and there from time to time. But AKs and ARs, you're going to find magazines, ammo, spare parts, accessories after every fight. If you survive the fight, there's going to be stuff there for the taking. There's that kind of stuff is going to litter the streets. Your three calibers that are the what I call the militia calibers, 223, 7.62, but 39, and 308. There's a few members that may choose to or be assigned to carry a shotgun or a bolt-action rifle, but they should still have a semi-automatic carbine or rifle in one of these three calibers. Due to restrictive and intrusive laws and finances and timing, we can't really mandate what you carry, but we do ask you to seriously take into consideration standardization and welfare of the unit into account if you haven't purchased your weapon already. We will insist, however, that you have an absolute bare minimum of 200 rounds of ammo for your weapon on hand and ready to go at a moment's notice at all times. Cold weather operations call for additional gear, field jacket, liner, heavy socks, insulated boots, gloves, heavier sleeping bag, added blankets to your regular sleeping bag. I tell you what works really well, too, is simply put one sleeping bag inside of another one. In extreme cold weather, that works so well. And if maybe in the next night, like around here the last couple of weeks, we've had some nights that was only 40 degrees. You don't need two sleeping bags in 40 degrees. Last night, we got up this morning, it was 12. Last night, or, you know, 30 minutes ago, Amy texted me and said it was 18 already. According to my phone, it is 16 degrees, 15 miles from here. So when you get down into that kind of weather, two sleeping bags are great. That works. That's one of the best ways to have extreme cold weather gear or sleeping facilities. Their options is putting one decent sleeping bag inside of another one. All right, your hot weather operations, desert terrain, you may call for additional gear, desert uniforms, jungle boots, whatever the case may be. Your gear should also be kept, as I said a while ago, ready to load at a moment's notice. Most of us put it in a large plastic toolbox or a trunk of some kind, and this allows you to not only keep everything ready and maintain that Minuteman image, it makes it easier to keep your gear orderly, somewhat secure while you're in the field. And your long-range shooters are going to have additional requirements, you know, camouflage, more powerful binoculars, spotting scope, rangefinder if possible. And requirements for weapons are listed in our marksmanship standards. Okay, that's what I've got for you tonight. We've got almost 2 hours. I'm going to go back here and check the chat room here and see if... Now, I see that the mountain shooter, you can probably get most of this stuff in about a 40-pound pack. I don't think that's too hard. You know, a lot of us are getting to where, you know, I've still got pretty good shape for the shape I'm in, but my knees, son, my knees are not what they used to be. I hate it. I laid this carpet in this building here the other day, and gosh damn, my knees were so sore the next day. But I got it done. You know, in short periods of time, I can do anything anybody else can do for the most part. Just not nearly as long, and 40 pounds. I can carry a 65-pound pack for a while. I could probably do it all day if I wasn't pushed too hard. 40 pounds I can do pretty well with. 35, 40 pounds I can carry most of the stuff that I need. And because of my attitude and my training and whatnot, I get by with a lot less stuff than some other people might. You know, some people might want to carry more things. I've learned over the years that what I want to carry and what, you know, what is essential and what is not. So it makes it a little easier. But Doc's got a good point. Night vision. I should have said that. I've got night vision. I've got two different sets of night vision. I've got goggles and a monocular in my trunk for my where my militia gear is. The training filters actually are for training, and like I said, you get one real filter sealed in your pack. You don't want to carry, unless you feel like you're going to be involved in a situation like that, or you've already have an idea that this has already happened. When you open those filters and install them, the charcoal in them starts to degrade immediately. And if you go and nothing happens and you leave it on there, then you've ruined a perfectly good filter. Training filters work fine for CS and stuff like that, which is probably what most of us will get will encounter. The other thing about training filters is that we use them for training. You put them on so that you can feel what it's like to breathe through them if you have to hurry. You have to hustle with your gear there. You want to know just how much you can take and what it's going to feel like so that you don't panic when you're actually in a real situation. You'll know how to gauge yourself and what you can do with that training filter on there. So I keep two or three extra real filters in my box, and I carry one in my pack that is sealed and ready to go if in the unlikely event that I would need to use that. Some of you people, particularly in the south, back east, maybe up in the Pacific Northwest, you're much more likely to encounter chemical and biological, particularly biological stuff, than we are here in the arid, in the high desert areas. Not that we won't, that we couldn't, not that it's impossible, but certainly more unlikely here than in some of these other places. So there's it's that whole risk versus reward thing. Always remember that when with your gear. Always remember risk versus reward. Do you need that? Let's say your teddy bear that you sleep with. Do you really need to bring that? Are the rewards of bringing it higher than or the risk of bringing it because it adds to your gear more or less than the reward for leaving it? That's probably a dumb example, but anything that you take, any extra stuff, any extra gear, make sure that you need it bad enough to justify taking it. So. All right, well, I'm about running out of things to say, so unless you guys got some quick questions or something real quickly out there, then I'm going to start easing towards the door here, see if I can get away and get in there before my loving bride is passed out there. She's probably already asleep. Bless her heart. She just had that dental work and everything. She's been working her butt off all the time. She never slows down. She's as tough a woman as I've ever met in my life. Tougher than a hell of a lot of men that I know. And you know, it's damn sure hard to slow Miss Amy down. I ain't kidding you a bit. So anyway, looks like we had a pretty good crowd, stayed with us most of the time here. Looks like we've still got a few anonymous. We are honored to have Luca Zana join us here 16 minutes ago. Luca, I'm glad you're in here, my friend. Glad you found us. I don't know how you found us, but I'm glad you found us anyway. All right. Well, that's the end of our militia presentation for tonight. I think that it's a timely topic. I hope that you guys will take this information and suggestions and use it to both, if you're looking for a unit, if you want to create a unit, if you want to improve a unit that you already have, get your gear squared away, whatever it is that you need to do. I hope that this has helped you in some fashion. I had a hell of a lot of news that I wanted to get into tonight, and I was not able to do it. I won't do much news on Friday nights. Those of you that have been with us for a while, Fridays is mostly music, and we try to wind down from some of the other stuff. There's probably a few things I'll have to throw in tomorrow night, but Monday night, look out. I'm going to unleash the hubs of hell on you Monday night with all the stuff that we've got here. So I'm going to get on out of here now. I'm starting to babble again. I will see you all on tomorrow. See you tomorrow night. Amy will do her show, and then we'll be on right after her. Good night and take care.
Thanks for joining us for another edition of The Shooting Bench. Please join COPE Monday through Friday for the most politically incorrect firearms information show on talk radio.
Lead, follow, or get the hell out of the way. Ladies and gentlemen, it is time for you to decide who you are. Somebody should call them. Somebody should write a letter. Somebody should try and stop that. Somebody should do something. I challenge you to look in the mirror and tell me what you see. If there's somebody there, that would be you. It's time for you to do something. There is no doubt that the Constitution is hanging by a thread. It's not going to wait for us much longer.